Happy October. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, October 1st, 2020, on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Later on our show, the procedures for restoring voting rights in Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has that report in just a few minutes. And Leah Uribe returns with the New Sound Perimeter in today's second half hour. After Ozarks on Here and Now, with a chaotic and historic debate behind us, you'll hear the latest on Campaign 2020. And with cold weather coming soon in many parts of the country, restaurants are finding creative ways to keep diners outdoors and COVID safe. One restaurant in Colorado will introduce yurts. Dining out during a pandemic on Here and Now, starting right after Ozarks at Large. Arkansas closes out September with 607 confirmed new cases of COVID-19 and another 335 probable cases from positive antigen test results. The Arkansas Department of Health is adding 19 deaths to the state's total. That now registers at more than 1,300 for confirmed and probable fatalities from the virus in the state. Pulaski County reported the most new confirmed cases, 51, Washington County, 43. Benton County recorded 28 confirmed new positive tests during the most recent 24-hour testing cycle, according to the Arkansas Department of Health. The 607 confirmed new cases statewide yesterday came from just more than 8,100 PCR tests. The 335 positive antigen test results derived from more than just 3,000 antigen tests. 490 Arkansans remain hospitalized because of complications from the disease, the same amount as the previous report. There are 48 patients in COVID-19 units in hospitals in Benton and Washington counties. That's one more patient than the previous 24 hours. Arkansas's senior U.S. Senator John Bozeman says short-term extensions to keep the government open, not the best solution, but he says it is better than a government shutdown in the middle of a public health emergency. A bill to keep the government operating through early December passed this week with Senator Bozeman's support. In a press release yesterday afternoon, the Republican two-term senator writes Congress should pass individual funding bills each year to avoid the chronic budget uncertainty that makes it difficult to plan for the future. And the most recent jobless rates for the Fort Smith Metro and the Northwest Arkansas Metro are below the statewide jobless numbers. Talk Business and Politics reports Arkansas's jobless rate for August at 7.4%. Northwest Arkansas's rate for the month is 5.7%, and the Fort Smith Metro, 6.6%. While those numbers are a decrease from previously this year for both markets, both metro jobless rates represent a nearly 3-point increase compared to August 2019. This is Ozarks at Large. Monday is the deadline to register to vote in the general election. Registration is generally a brief process. However, it can take a bit longer for Arkansans with a felony on their record. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Arkansans convicted of a felony can have their voting rights restored under certain conditions. They must have been discharged from probation or parole, paid all probation or parole fees, satisfied all terms of imprisonment, and paid all applicable court costs, fines, or restitution. Josh Bridges, election systems analyst at the Arkansas Secretary of State's office, says once someone meets all of this criteria, they have to obtain proof to register to vote.
Basically, once you're scot-free, in a sense, and all those things are met, you can obtain paperwork from, typically it's your probation or parole officer can help you and guide you with getting the proper paperwork you need. Once you have that documentation, all you have to do is go to the county clerk's office, show it to them, fill out a voter registration application, and at that point, you should be good to go.
Bridges says when someone is convicted of a felony, that information is transmitted to his office and then to all of the state's county clerks who will remove convicted voters from the rolls. Bridges says the information is distributed monthly.
They'll put that information into the system, and if that person's a registered voter, their record will pop up, and at that point, they can be removed. The reason for removal is logged, and then there is also a court docket number that's put into the system, so that can also be referred back to. That comes in handy, especially when it comes to putting people back into the system that wish to register to vote again.
According to the Secretary of State's office, from January 1st through December 31st of 2019, 2,605 registrants were removed for being convicted felons. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, it has become common practice in the U.S. to make felons ineligible to vote, but state approaches to the matter vary. For example, felons in Maine and Vermont never lose the right to vote, even while they're incarcerated. In 11 states, felons lose their voting rights indefinitely for some crimes, or require a governor's pardon in order for voting rights to be restored, face an additional waiting period after completion of sentence, this includes parole and probation, or require additional action before voting rights can be restored. Bridges says there's not a waiting period in Arkansas, but the hardest part of restoring voting rights can be obtaining the necessary paperwork.
We had somebody that inquired with our office not too long ago. Their parole officer had retired, I believe, or had moved on to another job. So that's kind of our blind spot as far as who specifically do you need to go and talk to other than your parole or probation officer. So if that kind of is not an option for you, I would recommend maybe speaking with the Department of Correction or Department of Community Correction. One of the state entities such as that, they may be able to guide you a little bit more than our office could.
Kaleem Nazim was released from prison in 2018 after being incarcerated for 28 years. The Jonesboro resident was sentenced to life without parole at the age of 17. In 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down laws that impose a mandatory sentence of life without parole for juveniles convicted of murder. In 2016, the court decided the ruling could be applied retroactively, which impacted Nazim. When he was released 2 years ago, he says he didn't have a probation officer or have to pay fees, so the process for registering to vote was smoother for him than it can be for others.
By me having the papers on hand, it was a more smoother transition, and also by me knowing the law, because a lot of people, just don't know that they are eligible to vote, because the myth is out there, if you have a felony or have had a felony, that you're not eligible to vote, and that's just not true. Now, it's a process that you do have to go through, but once you understand the process and the proper avenues to take, it's a pretty straightforward process. But I think one of the biggest barriers on getting guys registered to vote is the belief that they can't vote.
Even for Arkansans who do know the law, the process of obtaining the proper paperwork can be a barrier.
You have some guys who are released in 1990 but still are on parole. So when they do exhaust their parole, then they have to, backtrack, to the unit they was released from. And there might be inadequate files on record and things of that nature. So it's a process, but sometimes it can be more overwhelming than people are willing to go through. So a lot of times, in my opinion, that's why guys, forsake their vote, because they don't want to go through the long process of being restored.
Because Nazim was convicted before he turned 18, he was never registered to vote. 2018 was the first time he registered and the first time he cast a ballot, but 2020 will be the first time he gets to participate in a presidential election.
Over the years, I used to always think about freedom, what my freedom looked like. One of the pivotal definitions of freedom to me was, being able to vote, being able to be an active representative and, in my community. So it was important for me to go ahead and get registered to vote and then vote that next election cycle. Now, this election cycle is going to be my first presidential race that I'm allowed to vote in, so I'm very excited and enthusiastic about that also.
Nazim has been able to help with voter education efforts through his work with the Arkansas chapter of the Poor People's Campaign. While Nazim was able to register and vote without any issues, he says the process to restore voting rights is not a fair one.
Because when a person is released from prison, or exhaust whatever fines that they have, then they shouldn't have to go through a process. They should have to go through the same process that any ordinary citizen have to go through who have never had a felony. If you're able to just go down there and register, a person who has had a felony should be able to go down there and register. Because I just have a thing that if we want people to be better, we got to treat them better. If you want a person to be act like a role model citizen within society, then we have to be role models to them also. And we can't afford to allow someone to have a scarlet letter on the rest of their life every time they want to apply for a job, a vote, and things of that nature. We are putting them through a different set of standards.
The Pulaski County Circuit and County Clerk's Office has created a brochure with information about steps to take for restoring your voting rights and expunging your record. You can find it online by searching for Restoration of Voting Rights in Arkansas. We'll also share a link on our website, OzarksAtLarge.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And Monday is the deadline for all Arkansans to register to vote. You can check your voter registration status at voterview.ar-nova.org. And a reminder, if you'd like to share this story or any others you hear on this edition of Ozarks at Large with friends or family through email or social media, it's easy to do. Just go to OzarksAtLarge.com, look for the appropriate day for the program or piece you want to share, and you'll find links there. Also, at OzarksAtLarge.com, you can browse past shows, past individual stories and interviews. And don't forget, you can always ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent edition of our show. And we're available as a free podcast through all the major podcast distributors. Oklahoma's State Department of Health is adding four more deaths from COVID-19 to that state's fatality count. The department updates its virus numbers each weekday at 11. There have now been 1,035 reported deaths from the virus in Oklahoma. The most recent reporting from the University of Arkansas reveals 17 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 on September 26th through the 29th, 68 active cases in the campus community. 63 of those active cases are among students, 5 reported among staff members. More than 91% of the space set aside for quarantine for students at the University of Arkansas remains empty. And the KUAF Giving Tree PPE drive for local schools has benefited a number of children and staff throughout the Ozarks. While we're no longer accepting donations here at the Carver Center for Public Radio, you can find a list of area businesses still accepting donations at our website, KUAF.com. Just look for Donate PPE on the right-hand side of the screen, or just check with the school nearest you to see if they could use some help. The Giving Tree and KUAF Public Radio Local Matters thanks to everybody over the past several weeks who's come by to donate PPE. We do appreciate it.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Paul Gatling here with you. In case you missed it, the new issue of the Business Journal is out this week, and the digital version is available at nwabusinessjournal.com. Included in the latest issue, details on the opening of a $30 million facility for Highlands Oncology Group. You have no doubt seen that new 5-story building just off the interstate in Springdale at the Don Tyson Parkway exit. On today's program, we will hear from Highlands Oncology Group CEO Jeff Honeycutt and find out just what that new building means for both the company and for cancer care in the region. That's straight ahead after the break on this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. Live fearless. More information at ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Highlands Oncology Group opened a 125,000 square foot building in Springdale last month. Jeff Honeycutt said the benefit is twofold, for Highlands Oncology Group as an organization and for its patients. Honeycutt was hired in October 2018 as the group's first ever chief executive officer. He said the five-story building will help Highlands Oncology Group streamline several operations that were previously spread throughout multiple buildings in Fayetteville. Here is Jeff Honeycutt now to discuss.
Really, our goals were twofold. First and foremost, we know this area here in Northwest Arkansas is growing each and every day, and really shows no signs of slowing down. We've done a good job over the years of meeting that growth by having available space and also by hiring physicians and staff as needed. But really looking ahead over the next 5 to 10 years or so, we knew that we needed to have a good deal more space available. And so that's kind of what prompted the Parkway campus. And that's looking at the number of exam rooms and infusion chairs that we had available prior to opening this. This really gives us a shot in the arm where we'll be able to accommodate that growth and match it for quite a while to come. The second arm of the why really has to do with our operational efficiency as a team. We were kind of scattered across multiple offices down in the Fayetteville region, where we had 4, 5, 6 different offices all within a half mile radius of each other or so. And this building has allowed us to be able to centralize those teams to where we can all get on the same building and take advantage of some of those efficiencies that come along with that close proximity to those around you.
Sure, and I know Chief, among those is your research department, and you get all your researchers together in one centralized location.
Yeah, definitely.
And so from the patient perspective, then, you know, what does this building mean for cancer care in the region? You know, what are some of the significant design elements maybe, and how do they influence the cancer care environment in Northwest Arkansas and the surrounding region?
Sure. There's been a heavy emphasis in this building on building out a comfortable, clean, warm feel for the patients. Patient flow in this building is outstanding. It's very easy for patients to be able to find the services that they're looking for. And once they've reached those areas, the waiting spaces are designed very comfortably, just kind of an intuitive flow from spot to spot. I think the inclusion of, as you mentioned, the inclusion of our research program right here in the building adds a great bonus to patients. There are several stories over the years prior to this where patients have been sent out to a Mayo or to an MD Anderson for a clinical trial, only to find out when they got there that right here in Northwest Arkansas, Highlands Oncology was offering the same trial. And the patient comes back and they're ecstatic to know that they can receive that kind of care. I think having our research department centralized here in this building is only going to add to that reputation and increase our ability to have more trials here and get patients on study faster than we have in the past.
Sure. How did this project, as you've evolved over the past couple of years, how has it followed other national oncology trends in terms of construction trends? You know, what's unique about the project compared with maybe other oncology construction trends and projects in the country?
Sure. I've had the good fortune over the last few years to see probably 25 or 30 different community oncology practices in particular. And what I've seen in community oncology, it can be an environment where it's basically a remodel on top of a remodel on top of a remodel in an existing space. And the feeling that you get out of those buildings as years go by is that they're kind of crunched. Staff are on top of each other. Patient waiting spaces are small. What I see in the building itself, the physician owners really had a strong commitment to a vision that's much beyond the here and now. So this building, I will say, is I'd say it's a good deal larger, good deal more modern than many of the structures that I've seen in a community oncology setting. And I think patients notice that right off the bat. Staff definitely notice that, and it just makes patients more comfortable coming in to receive their treatment, and makes staff happier to come to work.
Right. Yeah, I think you mentioned that, you know, this building is built for that growth for 5 and maybe even 10 years and longer. Had you built it bigger than you needed right now, but with an eye on that potential growth here in Northwest Arkansas. Now that the project is done, you know, your tenure here in Northwest Arkansas, you've been in the job for a little over 2 years now, right at about 2 years, and that's largely mirrored the construction timeline for that building. So I know that's been the top priority, but you know, now that the building is open, what's the next priority on your agenda? What's on the horizon for Highlands Oncology?
Sure. This building here on this campus is really just the first step of what we're going to be doing here in the Springdale area here for Northwest Arkansas. We own, we have a good deal more of the dirt surrounding us, both to the west and to the north here in this area. So I think there are really limitless possibilities. I know first and foremost on the radar for us is exploring radiation and also proton therapy here in Northwest Arkansas on the Springdale campus. Proton in particular is a lofty goal, but one that we see as holding value here for the people of this region as it continues to grow. It just makes a lot of sense to be able to have cutting-edge medicine here in Northwest Arkansas.
Honeycutt said by the end of this year, Highlands Oncology Group will occupy most of the Springdale building's 5 floors. On the first floor, Fayetteville-based Medical Associates of Northwest Arkansas, known locally as MANA, is planning to open a 4th location of the Breast Center. It will join MANA's existing breast cancer screening clinics in Fayetteville, Rogers, and Harrison. In other stories you will find in the latest issue of the Business Journal, Jeff De La Rosa takes a look at Landmark PLC. That's the region's largest accounting firm, and what it's been like for the firm this year to guide its clients through multiple aspects of the CARES Act. Plus, Cushman & Wakefield Sage Partners in Rogers is making a foray into multifamily property management. And a new hospitality project is in the early stages of development in downtown Bentonville. It's being led by the two sons of Walmart CEO Doug McMillan. Those stories and more are all in the latest issue of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal. To become a subscriber, visit us online at nwabusinessjournal.com. I'm Paul Gatling, and that is today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Ahead on this Thursday, Ozarks at Large, a painter in Rogers is sharing her love of the Buffalo National River and all the people who have known it with her new work. It has been selected as the logo for the Buffalo National River's upcoming 50th anniversary. Plus, coffee. Leah Uribe explains her nearly lifelong love of the drink and explores coffee's centuries-long relationship with music in a new edition of Sound Perimeter. That's ahead. Right now, music from the Fayetteville Roots Festival and Red Barn Studios.
Hey there, this is Bernice Hembree with Fayetteville Roots and local band Smokey in the Mirror. Today we have a song from the Roots Archives from 2017. This was recorded when River Wireless was in town for the Fayetteville Roots Festival. This song is called Sailing Away.
Big thank you to KUAF and Ozarks at Large and Red Barn Studios for making this song possible. To learn more about these fabulous musicians, visit their website at riverwireless.com. And more about Fayetteville Roots Festival at therootsfest.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. After a series of setbacks this year, a recently announced grant from the Wingate Foundation is helping Art Ventures hire its first executive director. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth spoke with the group's board president, Sharon Killian, about what that means for the organization's future.
By now, the story is probably familiar. 2020 ushers in a lot of promise and then delivers a lot of uncertainty. At least that's been the narrative for Art Ventures NWA, an artist collective based in Fayetteville. At the end of 2019, Board President Sharon Killian says the group had been in talks with the Wingate Foundation for a grant to expand operations and hire on an executive director.
And you know what happened with us being moved out of 101 West Mountain Street by the church and then looking for a place and thinking that we had something in the works that we had been looking at for since October 2019, and that did not work. We were looking at the Stone House on Senna Street. And in any event, then not just any event, COVID-19 occurred.
Killian says after having to give up its gallery space off the square in downtown Fayetteville, Art Ventures had just started to develop roving exhibits everywhere from local performance halls to restaurants when the pandemic shut down those operations.
Everybody was shutting down around us. So we have all actually been trying to make our way through 2020. We were unable to move forward because of the pandemic, with, you know, installing a new executive director, you know, getting a place to physically live wasn't really an option anymore.
But last week, Art Ventures announced the receipt of a $197,800 grant from the Wingate Foundation. The money will go to hiring the group's first executive director, which Killian says is an important step in the mission to develop a robust artist community in Northwest Arkansas.
So we have already been receiving applications, and we are hoping for as quickly as possible. The board members, you know, we're all worker bees, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a committee that's actually reviewing applications, and we hope, I really hope, that it doesn't take a long time to find the perfect match, a leader who will be the face of the organization. We want somebody now. So we're not waiting for COVID to go away, because it won't. And we need somebody to get inside the culture of being able to function this way and help us create the perfect space in this climate and build us toward the future, which is, I don't believe, going to be anything like it has been in the past.
Because despite the challenges of a health crisis and not having their own physical gallery, Art Ventures has adapted their business to this climate. They just closed the exhibit The Ways We See in August and opened Isolation in the same month, all virtually through their website, and now have an installation, The Shape of Our World, up in the Faulkner Performing Arts Center on the University of Arkansas campus.
We're still doing things virtually, but since things have opened up a little bit with COVID measures, safety measures in place and seriously taken, we have actually an exhibition that is at our sister gallery, Art Ventures at Faulkner. And we have been invited, we were asked to launch an exhibition in Springdale at 101 West Johnson Street, with also ticketed entry, as we have at Faulkner, so that we don't have a big crowd. It's so different than what I'm used to doing. You know, we're not looking for a big crowd. We're time tickets, and so that we can keep everybody safe.
Killian says these innovations have been vital in bringing art to the public, but a major part of Art Ventures' work is to provide support for local and regional artists. And she says now, many people just aren't buying pieces like they were before the pandemic.
We're used to, Art Ventures is used to being able to sell artwork for artists. And we have not had great success with that this year. Since people can see the artwork online, sometimes, you know, you can go back and look at it. You're not feeling, it's easier, I think. It's more impressive to be able to see the work in person and love it and then not leave without it. Then, you know, looking at it virtually. So we're providing pleasure. The artist's works are providing intellectual, you know, stimulation, pleasures that, you know, we need to survive. And we have to find ways to support artists who may not really be able to go into a live exhibition. I'm trying to figure out a way to encourage locals, you know, who've been supporting our local artists to start to buy again. We've had a few sales, but not enough. For artists who depend on art as, and who had gotten to a place where they could depend on art as a real means of support.
The group is working on developing an e-commerce site on their website to make selling art more accessible for consumers and artists. But Killian says she's also trying to find other ways to engage the community and local artists.
You'll see that murals are kind of a thing right now too. Art Ventures and Northwest Arkansas African American Heritage Association, which I'm also president of, collaborated on the mural No Justice, No Peace off of Dixon, and we were able to support a few artists with that. And that's part of, I'm doing another one, and part of the reason I do murals, not just from an individual perspective, you know, only mine, or only one particular artist who's a star, is because I want to support artists. And one good way to do that is to involve them in a project such as that.
That mural behind St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville, depicting the Black Lives Matter protest earlier this summer, employed the help of six local artists. And Killian says she believes having a full-time director at the helm of Art Ventures will move that mission of collaboration forward.
As I said, we're looking for an executive director person who will be able to become our storyteller, right? And build upon what we have started. So, yes, our mission is still really strong. Our vision is sharpened. And so the executive director is going to need to be able to kind of start to breathe it.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
The 9th annual Angel One 5K 10K, which is hosted by Arkansas Children's Hospital Agent One Transport Team, is taking place Saturday, and as you might expect in 2020, it will be held virtually. Registration is $25. You can find out more and sign up for Saturday's virtual run at angelonerun.com. University of Arkansas Fort Smith Alumni Association hosting their own virtual 5K race to support the UAFS Alumni Legacy Scholarship. Registration, $25. Registrants who sign up by, the end of today receive a free T-shirt commemorating the race. And those who sign up are invited to walk, to run, or, as the press release says, hop, cycle, or skip their 5K anytime between October 17th and 31st. If you'd like to register for the 5K in time to get that race T-shirt, and that deadline is today, you can go to alumni.uafs.edu. And the Alzheimer's Foundation of America's nationwide virtual Alzheimer's Walk in the Park during National Alzheimer's Awareness Month is going to take place in November. Proceeds from this virtual walk support programs and services for the nearly 6 million American families affected by Alzheimer's. You can learn more about this walk, and it is a national walk, at afawalk.com, or you can call the Alzheimer's Foundation of America free, 866-232-8484.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Restore Humanity's 2020 virtual Winetopia begins Thursday, October 1st at 7 p.m. on Facebook Live. Winetopia tickets include a gift bag, access to the online silent auction, and ways to support local community partners during the week of Winetopia. Proceeds to benefit Restore Humanity's work in Kenya. RestoreHumanity.org for tickets and information.
This is Ozarks at Large. Buffalo National River Partners recently announced the winner of a logo design contest to promote and celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Buffalo National River. The 50th anniversary is in 2022.
My name is Ana Laura Salinas de Guerrero, and I'm a designer.
Rogers-based graphic designer and painter Ana Laura Salinas Guerrero was chosen from over 100 contestants. Her computer-generated logo, which resembles a primitive woodcut, features a present-day canoeist on the river beneath majestic blue limestone bluffs, illuminated by golden light. But his reflection on the water reveals an ancient canoeist representing indigenous peoples who once inhabited the watershed.
I've been on the Buffalo River before, and it's a beautiful place. And with the idea of commemorating that people from the beginning realized the beauty of it and wanted to conserve it for future generations, that idea was where I was really drawn to. And thinking about who were those, Native Americans that already knew about that river before any settlers came through. So I'm sure they were also drawn to the beauty of the river.
Ginger Milan is the president of the Buffalo National River Partners, the host of the contest.
117 entries. All of them were judged. We had a team of seven judges, and we had three rounds. The first round was primarily a yes-no vote, and then the second round was done with a 100-point rubric that judged the visual impact. Was it unique and original to the river? Did it use have a clever use of color? Will the design be instantly recognizable?
The judges were three visual artists, two graphic artists, as well as river concessionaires and state officials representing the upper, middle, and lower Buffalo River. The logo, Mylan says, had to appeal to all age groups, encourage cultural and natural preservation, and be easily reproducible.
It now belongs to the Park Service, Buffalo National River. It will be used to promote the 50th anniversary of the park. It will be various sizes. One of the judging criteria included how will this look as a 2-inch logo on a piece of paper, or will it be great on a t-shirt, retail signage, merchandise opportunities in the park. And it will be used after the 50th anniversary for a number of years. Anna's design fit all of the check boxes.
For her effort, Guerrero was awarded $1,000. Three runners-up received National Park passes valued at $200 each. You can see the winning design at OzarksAtLarge.com. There you can also learn more about 50th anniversary plans. The Buffalo National River, America's first declared national river, established in 1972. One of the few remaining undammed rivers in the lower 48, the Buffalo flows freely for 135 miles through Newton, Searcy, Baxter, and Marion counties.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
Coffee time, my dreamy friend, it's coffee time. Let's listen to some jazz and rhyme and have a cup of coffee.
I hear people are celebrating International Coffee Day. And to me, drinking coffee is a celebration in and of itself, 365 days a year. Of course, it doesn't help that I am from Colombia, producer of the best coffee in the world. I know I'm biased. And that I was introduced to coffee at age 5 as a breakfast staple. But that love for coffee is not exclusive of us Colombians. Back in the Baroque period, mid-18th century, Johann Sebastian Bach wrote a secular cantata about an addiction to coffee. Schweigt stille, plaudert nicht, be still, stop chattering, BWV 211, also known as the Coffee Cantata, was not meant to be performed at St. Thomas Lutheran Church in Leipzig, like the other religious cantatas Bach wrote. Instead, the text is about a father advising his daughter to give up coffee, otherwise she would not be able to find a husband, to which she replies that she would just find a husband who would let her have coffee. This cantata reflects the growing popularity of coffee at the time, as well as those gender roles. Let us listen to an excerpt of the aria, "Ei, wie schmeckt Süße?" Ah, how sweet coffee tastes, performed by Ensemble Echoes and soprano Holly Teague.
Bye.
Argentinian composer Astor Piazzolla wrote Histoire du Tango, History of Tango, in 1986 with the intention of conveying the history and evolution of the tango in four movements, representing four eras between 1900 and 1960. One of those eras is Café 1930, in which he refers to the time when people stopped dancing to the tango and became interested in listening to it. This change made the tango slower and more melancholic. So imagine yourself in your favorite café, drinking your favorite café, and listening to Astor Piazzolla's Café 1930, interpreted by flutist Cécile Dahoux and guitarist Pablo Márquez. Opened Sound Perimeter with American singer and songwriter Natalie Cole's interpretation of Cole Porter's song Coffee Time, and closed with American jazz singer Sarah Vaughan and her version of Black Coffee. Because, when talking about coffee, are there other colors? This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
I haven't slept a wink. I walk the floor and watch the door, and in between I drink black coffee. Love's a hand-me-down broom. I'll never know a Sunday in this weekday room. I'm talking to the shadows, 1 o'clock to four, and Lord, how slow the moments go when all I do is pour black coffee. Since the blues caught my eye, I'm hanging out on Monday, my Sunday dreams to dry. And I'm moaning all the morning and mourning all the night. And in between it's nicotine and not much hard to find. It's driving me crazy, this waiting for my baby to maybe come around.
The calmest songs about caffeine. Love that song. This is a Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large Sound Perimeter with Leah Uribe, produced by Lee Wood, a regular feature of our Thursday editions of the program. Tomorrow, a Friday Ozarks at Large, some more of our regular features. We'll start the show with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics reviewing some of the news from the week. We'll also hear from Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. She has some live events we can go to. She has some virtual events we can watch. And she has a new movie on DVD that she says is worth our time. All of that and more on tomorrow's Friday Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF. And anytime after that, at OzarksAtLarge.com, and always by asking your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent full episode.
That's the unmistakable piano of McCoy Tyner in the background. And I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz. On this edition of the show, we'll hear more music from McCoy Tyner, as well as John Scofield, Toots Thielemans, David Sanborn, and Art Tatum. Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday, right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Blue Eye, both Blue Eye, Missouri, and Blue Eye, Arkansas. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright School of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Daniel Carruth, and Jacqueline Froelich, who gave us information and sound about the logo for the Buffalo National River's 50th anniversary coming up in 2022. Our mid-show song provided by the Fayetteville Roots Festival and Red Barn Studios. As I just mentioned, Sound Perimeter every Thursday, hosted and written by Leah Uribe, produced by Lee Wood. Thanks to Paul Gatling for Talk Business and Politics, Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Kyle Kellums. Please take care of yourself. We'll talk again real soon.